There are three qualities that are absolutely essential to your success. These are qualities possessed by the highest performing men and women throughout history and right down to our present day. These qualities are the foundation qualities of personal power and the superior personality. They are fundamental elements of a high personal character, and fortunately, they can all be learned. The three qualities that you must have in order to both think big and act big are self-discipline, courage, and persistence. These three qualities are like a triangle. Each of them reinforces each of the others. Each of them is indispensable to the others. None of them can exist without each of the others developed to a certain level. Aristotle's work on happiness and human character concluded that if you find yourself without a particular virtue or value you admire, you can develop it in yourself by studying it and then by acting as if you had it already. In fact, any virtue of character that you wish to develop can be looked upon as a goal. It is amenable to being written down, idealized, verbalized, visualized, emotionalized, and then, ultimately, realized. You can, in fact, design and shape your own character as you go through life by taking control over the things that you think, say, and do. When you repeatedly walk, talk, think, and act in a manner consistent with the values that you wish to program into your personality, you develop new positive habit patterns of thought and action. You actually become the person you have imagined yourself to be. Self-discipline is the foundation quality of character. You can have every advantage in life. You can have the best education, and you can learn and memorize every success principle ever discovered. You can have every opportunity in the world opened up to you, and have wonderful contacts at every level. But if you lack the self-discipline to master your own will, your own attention, your own thoughts and behaviors, none of them will do you any good. On the other hand, with self-discipline, carefully developed and regularly practiced, you can do, be, or have anything that you want in life. Success is tons of discipline. Perhaps the very best definition of self-discipline is, self-discipline is the ability to make yourself do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not. What this means is that it is only when you can force yourself to do the things that you know are necessary, even when you don't feel like doing them, that you are exercising and strengthening your powers of discipline. I said earlier that a positive mental attitude, a sense of inner happiness and personal power, comes from a sense of control. When you feel that you are in control of yourself and your life, you feel good about yourself, and you become more capable of doing anything that comes to your hand to do. A sense of control is the foundation of a healthy personality. All stress and frustration comes from feeling out of control of yourself and your life, or of being controlled by others. All satisfaction and inner strength comes from feeling that you're in charge of yourself and of what happens to you. The subject of control, or what psychologists call the locus of control, the place where you feel the control is located in your life, is a major issue in psychology today. When you look around you at your life, you'll have to ask yourself who and what you feel is in charge of the important parts of your day-to-day activities. Who decides the critical issues of your life? Many people feel that their boss is in control of their lives. Some people feel they are controlled by their bills, or by their families, or by their earlier experiences as a child with their parents. But whatever it is, the truth is that you are really in complete control of your life, if you choose to be. Self-discipline is the mental quality that enables you to take control of the sequence of events in your life. And this is the key to both discipline and personal power. You can always decide for yourself what you're going to do first, what you're going to do second, and what you're not going to do at all. The choices that you make over the sequence of events and activities in your life determines everything that happens to you. You are where you are and what you are today because of the choices and decisions that you have made in the past. If you want to improve your life in the future, you can begin this very moment to make different and better choices and decisions. The wonderful thing about being a free person is that you are always free to choose the sequence of events in your life, what you do and don't do, and in what order. And in this freedom lies your ability to sculpt and shape everything that eventually happens to you. It's important to note that actions have consequences. The things that you do have consequences in your life. The reality principle says that you can control the action, but the consequences will then take on a life of their own. You cannot will the action without simultaneously willing the results. Many people are confused on this issue. They think that if they do something that is not particularly productive, that they should not have to pay by suffering consequences of that particular behavior. But once you have engaged in an action, once you have put the ball into play, the consequences are, to a large degree, out of your hands. And here's another important point. An inaction is often as important to your life and your future as any particular action that you can take. Whatever has consequences can be considered an action, even if the action consists of refraining from doing a particular thing. We talked about the importance of consequences earlier. You can set priorities in your life by developing a long-time perspective and by thinking through what the likely consequences of doing or not doing something might be. If you, for example, do not continually upgrade your skills, you are setting into motion a series of consequences that will eventually catch up with you and which can cut off major opportunities for you in the future. A person who goes home at night and watches television is engaging, first of all, in the action of watching television, and second of all, in the inaction or the failure to act in doing something that is productive in his or her life. Your time is limited. You can only do a certain number of things each day. And remember the crowding out principle with regard to action and inaction. This simply says that if you spend an enormous amount of time engaged in high-value activities that enhance your life and move you towards your most important goals, before you know it, the day will be over, and you will have had no time to spend in low-value activities that do you no good at all. In its simplest terms, unsuccessful people waste their time. Successful people use their time well. It's as simple as that. And in every case, it involves a choice between doing one thing or doing another. In every case, life involves the control that you exert or fail to exert over the sequence of events in your life. Successful people are those who choose to have dinner before dessert. They choose to do what is hard and necessary before they do what is fun and easy. They exert their wills and practice disciplining themselves to pay the price of success in advance before they engage in relaxing or amusing activities. For example, when you get up in the morning, the highest and best use of your time is to mentally and physically exercise and then plan and organize the day ahead. But most people get up in the morning, turn on the television or radio, read the newspaper or magazines, drink a little coffee, and then roll off to work with barely enough time to get there punctually. Successful people, on the other hand, get up in the morning and they begin immediately to make every minute count. And whatever you repeat over and over again soon becomes a new habit. For example, if you came home every night and instead of eating a healthy dinner, you had a big piece of pie with a scoop of ice cream, what would happen to you? How would you feel? What would you be likely to do for the rest of the evening? Well, if you came home and ate a piece of pie with ice cream, it would kill your appetite for more nutritious foods. If you did this on a regular basis, you would soon get into the habit of coming home at night and eating pie and ice cream. Afterwards, you would feel tired and sluggish. You would probably sit around and watch television or engage in idle activities. Your level of physical health would decline. You would get a sugar rush from the pie and ice cream, and then afterwards you'd feel depressed and tired. Many people do something similar with each day. At the end of their workday, they go to the bar for happy hour, or they come home, flip on the television, and begin channel surfing for the evening. Over time, they begin to look forward to the end of the day so that they can begin engaging in mindless activities. These activities soon become a habit. If someone comes along and suggests that they attend a seminar, read a book, or listen to an audio program, they'll come up with all kinds of excuses about being too busy, not having enough time, and being already committed to some other activity. In each case, they have formed bad habits, and the bad habits have now become their masters. A businessman named Herbert Gray some years ago studied successful people for 12 years, looking for what he called the common denominator of success. His discovery was extremely simple but lastingly important to you and I. He found that the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people was that successful people were more concerned with pleasing results, while unsuccessful people were more concerned with pleasing methods. Successful people were more concerned with what was likely to happen as a result of their efforts. Unsuccessful people were more concerned with enjoying the trip, and they didn't give too much thought to what might eventually happen if their main focus was on pleasure on the way through. Dennis Waitley says that successful people are focused on goal achieving, while unsuccessful people are focused on tension relieving. Now, there is a place for tension relieving, but it comes after goal achieving. There is a place for dessert, but it comes after dinner. If you go home and eat a nutritious dinner, your desire for dessert will diminish dramatically. You will eat much less of it. You will certainly have your dessert, but it will be in the proper sequence of events. It will not become your main aim or purpose in life. And this ability to choose the sequence of events, to choose to do what is hard and necessary and helpful to your future, is totally a matter of self-discipline and willpower. It's your ability to put it on yourself. It is your ability to be adamant with yourself and to force yourself over and over again to do what is right and necessary until it becomes a habit. Successful people are those who have developed the habit of self-discipline. Failures are those who have never developed it. From the days of the ancient Greeks, all of education was character education, and the core of character education was developing within young people disciplines that would then serve them for the rest of their lives. Now, let's say you've reached a point in life where you're not as well disciplined as you would like to be. What do you do? The answer is simple. Aristotle dealt with it in 330 BC. And it is this. You imagine to yourself exactly how you might behave if you were already well disciplined. You dwell on this particular thought, and you visualize it regularly. You affirm to yourself, "I am extremely well disciplined." You say this over and over to yourself throughout the day. And finally, you act as if you already were a highly disciplined person. You carry yourself at every moment as if you were one of the most disciplined people that anyone would ever meet. You fake it until you make it. You pretend that you are disciplined until this new behavior locks itself into your subconscious mind and you become automatically disciplined and controlled in everything you do. This is not an easy process, by the way, but it is eminently doable. We are seeing situations today where young people are taken out of the inner cities after a lifetime of poor schooling, poor parenting, poor experiences, and they're joining the armed forces. After 2 solid years in the armed forces, they're coming out as proud, straight, strong, well-organized, and well-disciplined young people. Discipline is something that can be trained into you, and it is something that you can train into yourself. The foundation of character is discipline, and your job is to go to work on yourself to develop it and to keep working on it all the days of your life. When you begin to develop the kinds of disciplines that will serve you, don't try to change your whole world at once. Pick one simple discipline and work on that. Every discipline that you practice strengthens every other discipline. You see, every weakness in discipline weakens your other disciplines as well, so be careful. For example, if you decide to get up a little bit earlier, discipline yourself to get up 15 minutes earlier for several days, maybe even several weeks. Do this over and over again until it becomes automatic for you to get up 15 to 30 minutes earlier. Don't try to change the world. Just change one thing until you lock it in. Then, using that as a stepping stone, establish another discipline, like getting up 15 minutes earlier still. One of the very best disciplines you can use, which will then affect your whole day, is to plan every day in advance, to set priorities, and then to begin each morning with your most important and usually your most difficult task. Once you've begun on your most important task, discipline yourself to stay with it until it's complete. Make it a habit to single-handle your tasks. Make it a habit to work on the most valuable use of your time and to keep on keeping on until you finish the job. Earlier in this program, I talked about the qualities of leaders throughout the ages. I said that in more than 3,300 studies of leadership, there was one quality that all leaders seemed to have in common, and that was the quality of vision. Well, there's a second quality that all 3,300 studies found that leaders had in common as well, and that is the quality of courage. Winston Churchill once wrote that courage is rightly considered the foremost of the virtues, for upon it all others depend. Even though most people do not dream big dreams and set clear goals for themselves, once they learn about it, it is not a difficult thing to do. You can sit down with a pad of paper and begin writing some of the things that you want to accomplish in the future. But this is where the hard part comes. If vision is the first part of leadership, then having the courage to fulfill your vision is the second part. You've heard it said that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. This means that the world is full of people with high and lofty goals and ambitions, but there are very few people who have the courage, the discipline, and the willpower to carry them out. The interesting thing about living consistent with a virtue-like self-discipline and its companion virtue, courage, is that each time you practice discipline or courage, you feel stronger and better about yourself. Your self-esteem goes up. You feel more confident and competent. You feel happier and stronger inside. On the other hand, each time you cave in the area of discipline or courage, your self-esteem goes down. You feel weaker and less confident. You don't like yourself or respect yourself as much. What this means is that a fundamental part of becoming personally powerful requires that you live consistent with the highest values you know over and over again. They are not only self-reinforcing, but they are self-rewarding. You get an immediate payoff of inner satisfaction each time you force yourself to do what you know you should do, even when you don't feel like it. We said earlier that the fear of failure is the greatest single obstacle to success in adult life. The antidote to the fear of failure is the courage to take action. Courage is so important as a quality that, like physical fitness, it requires a variety of exercises to build it and maintain it. We know, of course, that you develop courage by facing your fears. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "Do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain." When you do the thing that you are afraid of, you take control over both your emotions and your life. You take your attitude from neutral or negative to positive and optimistic. Do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain. As I said earlier, many people fear public speaking. But Toastmasters International has developed a powerful method of teaching public speaking even to people who are absolutely terrified of the whole idea of standing up and speaking in front of others. It is called the process of systematic desensitization, and you can use it in many areas of your life as well. Systematic desensitization is a psychological term that refers to your doing something over and over again until it no longer holds any negative emotion for you. In Toastmasters International, each member is required to stand up and speak, even if for just a few seconds, at every meeting. After several months of weekly meetings, a person who is so terrified that he couldn't lead silent prayer in a phone booth becomes so confident about his ability to stand up and speak in front of his peers that they compete for bigger and longer opportunities to talk on their feet. I've worked with countless executives who've taken my advice and joined Toastmasters, or taken a course from the Dale Carnegie Organization. Within 6 months, they tell me that they are completely different people. From being shy and self-effacing at meetings and in presentations, they become calm, confident, bold, and even eloquent in expressing their points on their feet with other people, and their careers take off as well. When you can speak on your feet, you appear to be smarter and more competent than a person who cannot. Many executives, both men and women, have seen their careers take off, have seen their incomes increase and their responsibilities expand as they face their fears by speaking over and over again until they became very good at it. In the Serengeti Plains of Africa, zoologists have developed a simple technique to determine which of the animals in a herd of antelopes, for example, is the leader. When a predator approaches a herd of grazing animals and the members of the herd pick up the scent in the wind, they begin drifting in the opposite direction. Very soon after, the leader will emerge. The leader will place himself between the predator and the herd while the herd begins to flee. The leader, risking his life with the lion or cheetah that is moving in on the herd, will nonetheless stand his ground to buy time for the others to escape. The leader always turns toward danger. This is as true for animals as it is for human beings. You become a leader to the degree to which you force yourself to turn toward danger as well. You identify the areas in your life that cause you stress and anxiety, and instead of avoiding them and hoping they will go away, you confront them directly. The actor Glenn Ford once said that if you do not do the things you fear, the fear controls your life. It's almost as if the fear were the puppeteer and you are the puppet. If you don't deal with the fear and cut the strings that hold you to the fear will cause you to dance emotionally and psychologically. If you let a fear go on for too long, it will tend to grow and grow and eventually come to dominate all of your thinking. Each time you think of the fearful situation or person, your heart will beat faster and your stomach will churn. You will be unable to sleep well at night. It will affect your health, your happiness, your relationships, and your interactions with your customers and coworkers. Over time, you will become so preoccupied with the fear-inducing situation that you'll not be able to think of anything else. And this is no way to live. The way you deal with fear is that you confront the fear, you face the fear, you deal with the fear, and you put an end to the fear. When I was a young man and confronted with a lot of fearful situations, I read a quote from Mark Twain. It said, "Courage is not lack of fear or absence of fear. It is mastery of fear, control of fear." The quote had an enormous impact on me. What I realized at that time was that we are all afraid of many things. To be afraid is normal and natural. In fact, the more intelligent you are, the greater number of possible fears you will have because of the greater sensitivity you will have to your world and to the things for which it is logical for you to fear. The only difference between the brave person and the coward is that the brave person confronts the fear and deals with it, while the coward turns from the fear and flees from it. And here's a wonderful thing. When you confront a fear and move toward it, it diminishes and grows smaller and loses its hold over you. But if you back away from a fear, it grows larger and soon dominates all of your thinking and emotions. When you habitually turn toward danger, do the thing you fear, face the fear situation, and move toward it bravely, it actually gets smaller and smaller, and soon you dominate the fear rather than having it dominate you. Soon, you have a tremendous sense of control, and the quality that you need more than anything else to face your fears is the quality of self-discipline. Wonderfully enough, when you discipline yourself to face your fears, to act courageously, even when you don't feel like it, your fear situation tends to resolve itself, and you feel terrific about yourself. You take full control over the evolution and growth of your own character and personality in a positive way. The first part of courage is the courage to launch in the direction of your goal. It is the ability and willingness for you to set a goal and then take the first step in the direction of achieving it. In a 12-year study at Babson College, entrepreneurial teacher Dr. Robert Ronstadt found that the primary difference between those who graduated from the school and went on to build successful businesses and those who did not was that those who built successful businesses were not afraid to launch their businesses before they could ever be guaranteed of any kind of success. Professor Ronstadt then articulated what has come to be called the corridor principle. He said that when you launch toward your goal, however distant, you begin to move down a corridor of time. As you move down this corridor, other doors of opportunity open up on either side of you. But you would not have been in a position to see the other doors of opportunity if you had not been in motion down this psychological corridor toward a goal. And most people who succeed greatly in life succeed in an area completely different from the area in which they started off. But because they were in motion, they saw opportunities and possibilities that would not have been available to them if they had waited until everything was just right. And by the way, everything will never be just right. The second part of courage is the courage to endure. It is the courage to hang in there. It is the courage to stay the course. It is the courage to persist in the face of all kinds of adversity. And self-discipline is the iron quality of character that enables you both to begin and to endure. Self-discipline is the single quality that enables you to develop the high levels of courage that you need to take risks and to move forward in the face of danger and uncertainty. It is self-discipline and the courage that comes from self-discipline that develops personal power within you that enables you to overcome any obstacle in your way. Now, there are several forms of courage that you need and which you can develop by practice to achieve the personal greatness that lies within you. The first form of courage is the courage to dream big dreams and to set big goals. That is where most people come to a halt. The very idea of setting big, challenging, exciting, worthwhile goals is so overwhelming for most people that they quit before they even begin. But this is not for you. So sit down, write out your goals as if anything were possible for you, and never be afraid to dream big dreams. The second type of courage is the courage to make a total commitment, throwing yourself wholeheartedly into whatever it is you decide to do. All successful people of my experience are people who are living fully engaged and fully involved in their life and in their goals. They don't do things by half measures. They may have no guarantees, but they're not afraid to put their whole hearts into their activities. If they fail, they will fail by trying greatly, not by standing on the sidelines wishing and hoping that things could be just right. The third type of courage you need is the courage to move out of your comfort zone, to move into your zone of discomfort, where you feel awkward, clumsy, and alone. The comfort zone is one of the greatest enemies of human potential. When people get into a comfort zone, they strive to stay in that comfort zone, and often their whole lives pass them by while they are furnishing and reinforcing their little rut of medium performance. You need the courage to continually move yourself in the direction of your biggest goals and ambitions, and you need to be willing to face discomfort in order for you to grow. The fourth type of courage you need is the courage to take a stand, especially with regard to your values, your vision, and your beliefs. You need to stand up for what you believe to be right. You need to stand up for other people who espouse those principles. You need to have the courage to stand four square for the highest values that you know, and then refuse to compromise yourself or your character because others may disapprove. You need the courage to launch in faith with no guarantees of success. Someone once wrote, "If every obstacle must first be overcome, nothing will ever get done." Courageous people are those who have a dream and a goal, and make a plan and take the first step with no assurances and no guarantees that their efforts will result in success. However, if you look back upon every step forward as a learning experience, and every setback as a valuable lesson that has been sent to you to make you stronger and better, you'll not be afraid to launch in faith into the unknown. You need the courage to risk failure. You need the courage to endure constant setbacks, disappointments, and temporary defeats. You need to deal with failure by realizing that it is an indispensable prerequisite for success. You need the courage to treat failure as an opportunity to more intelligently begin again. You need to overcome the fear of failure by doing the things you fear over and over, and then by resolving to bounce rather than break when things don't work out for you. And the higher and better goals you set for yourself, the more times you will trip and fall. But as long as you have clear goals, you will always be failing and falling in a forward direction. You will always be picking yourself up a little closer to the goal than you were before. You need the courage to turn toward danger continuously. Identify all the fear situations in your life that cause you any stress today. Sit down and decide what the worst possible outcome of each of those situations might be. Resolve to accept the worst should it occur, and then take action to resolve each of these situations. Refuse to allow a fear situation to remain in your life, dominating your thinking and emotions and holding you back. You need the courage to practice zero-based thinking continuously in your life. Ask yourself, is there anything in your life that you would not get into if you had to do it over again today? Use these words. Knowing what I now know, is there anything in my life that I wouldn't start if I had to do it over? Have the courage to realize that there are situations in every person's life that, knowing what they now know, they wouldn't get into if they had the freedom to choose. And if you decided that you wouldn't get into something, your next question is, how do you get out, and how fast? You can't make a great life for yourself if right in the middle of your life there is something that you wouldn't even get into if you had to do it over again. And you always know when you are dealing with a zero-based thinking situation. It causes you a great deal of stress. It preoccupies you continually. It sometimes keeps you awake at night and dominates your conversation. You always know what it is. You need the courage to admit that you are wrong and that you have made a mistake when you get new information on any situation. It's amazing how many people keep themselves locked into a low level of performance because they won't admit that they're not perfect. They will not admit that with the passing of time, something that seemed like a good idea has proven to be a bad choice or decision. Don't be afraid to cut your losses. Don't be afraid to admit that you were wrong and to bail out. Don't be afraid to put one course of action aside and embark on something completely different. This is the mark of courage, personal power, and effective thinking. You need the courage to be willing to make mistakes and learn from them. All peak performers continually make decisions, make mistakes, learn from them, self-correct, and carry on. Successful people are not those who necessarily make the right decisions all the time, but they eventually make their decisions right. If they make a mistake, they shrug it off, learn from it as much as possible, and then continue on. Remember, you can only learn to succeed by failing and making mistakes. The more you fail and the more mistakes you make, the smarter you are getting and the more likely it is that you will eventually succeed greatly. You need the courage to accept complete responsibility for your life, which means to take ownership for results. You need the courage to refuse to make excuses or defend yourself. You need the courage to say over and over again, "I am responsible. I am responsible. I am responsible." When something goes wrong, you immediately become future-oriented and solution-oriented. You say, "What do we do from here? What's the next step? What did we learn?" You pick yourself up and carry on, extracting the wheat from the situation and throwing away the chaff. You need what is called courageous patience. This is a special quality of leadership where you remain courageous after you've embarked towards your goal and when you have not yet seen any results. It's amazing how many people break and run in that zone between when they begin and when they begin to see a payoff. But this is not for you. Once you've started towards your goal, remain calm, confident, and patient until things begin to happen one way or another. The final courage you need, as we've said before, is the courage to hang in there longer than anyone else. Persistence is the quality that will ultimately guarantee your success. Your ability to persist in the face of anything that the world can throw at you can be your greatest asset. And the fact is, just as in baseball, if you keep on swinging, you must ultimately hit a home run. If you refuse to quit, you must ultimately succeed. In 30 years of studying successful people, I found one thing for sure. No one was ever defeated until they accepted defeat as a reality. And if you continue to persist long enough and hard enough, you must ultimately succeed. No one can ever defeat you but yourself. When you develop the self-discipline to make yourself do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not, and you use this self-discipline to build high levels of courage and persistence within yourself, you will become a personally powerful individual. You will soon feel that there is nothing that you cannot accomplish. By developing this personal power, you will bring yourself to the point where you feel completely unstoppable. Your ability to think big about yourself and your future is the starting point of your accomplishing important things with your life. You can never accomplish more on the outside than you can imagine yourself capable of on the inside. The more you expand your inner attitudes of mind, the bigger goals and dreams you set for yourself, and the higher standards you aspire to, the more you will accomplish in everything you attempt to do. Success leaves tracks. It is not an accident. Success happens for specific reasons to specific people. Throughout history, there have been countless men and women who have started with absolutely nothing, sometimes late in life, and gone on to achieve great success in their careers and in their personal lives. If you want to live the life of which you are capable, you must study other successful people, as we have done throughout this program, and do what they do over and over again until you get the same results. I've said before that self-discipline is the iron quality of character and personal success. You can know everything there is to know on the subject, but until you have the discipline to apply it on a regular basis in your life, it will do you no good. A person with limited talents and abilities, limited resources, and limited contacts can accomplish extraordinary things if he has the willpower to pay the price of success until he achieves it. Earlier, I mentioned the Gallup Organization study of a few years ago, where they interviewed 1,500 of the men and women listed in Marquis's Who's Who in America. This is a listing of the most prestigious Americans living today. It includes presidents, senators, and congressmen, plus the heads of major industrial corporations, university presidents, Nobel Prize winners, and many others who've made significant contributions to their worlds. It even includes a high school football coach who never earned more than $26,000 per year, but whose influence on his students was so profound that he turned out champion after champion. In interviewing these high-performing men and women, and the people around them, the researchers developed a profile of high performance. They found that the most successful men and women in America, by all standards, had five qualities in common. The first quality they identified was common sense. Common sense was defined as a practical, objective way of looking at their life and their problems and having the ability to think them through sensibly and systematically. Common sense was also defined as the ability to have an experience, to learn from that experience, and then to apply the results of that experience to subsequent experiences. They say that wisdom is what enables you to recognize a mistake when you make it again. But more importantly, successful people seem to have had a considerable amount of experience by which they have learned to identify patterns that occur in their work and in the world around them. As a result of being able to identify many patterns, when they see a new event, it reminds them of a previous situation. They can almost instantly make a correct decision about what is likely to happen and what they should do to either avoid danger or to capitalize on opportunity. This brings us to an important point. Aristotle once wrote that wisdom is an equal measure of experience plus reflection. This means that it is not the experiences alone that make you wise. It is the time that you take to reflect on your experiences that enables you to absorb the valuable lessons that they have to offer. Successful men and women today budget specific times during their days and weeks where they can sit quietly by themselves and reflect on the things that are happening to them. These periods of reflection enable them to integrate their experiences into new patterns. These new patterns then enable them to think better and more efficiently when they experience future events. Now, I would add to Aristotle's dictum about experience and reflection by saying that today, wisdom is an equal measure of knowledge plus experience plus reflection. Today, you have to be continually taking in new knowledge that you can then use and compare with your old knowledge and experiences in order to make better decisions for the future. Since knowledge in every field is doubling every 2 to 3 years, your knowledge in your field must double every 2 to 3 years just for you to stay even. If you want to get ahead, you must study and work on yourself even harder. For many years in America and throughout the world, the most successful people in every society were those who had more, and the least successful were those who had less. It was always a contest between the haves and the have-nots. However, in the information age, when the primary sources of value are knowledge and skill and the ability to apply it in some useful way, the major differences in people today are between those who know more and those who know less. Today, high incomes flow to those people who have developed themselves to the point where they can add considerable value in their work situation. For example, a neurosurgeon earns more than a ditch digger, but it takes 15 years of study and practice for a person to be able to make a good living as a neurosurgeon. This doesn't mean that the neurosurgeon is a better person than the ditch digger. It just means that he or she has invested far more time and effort and a far greater number of years to develop that higher level of knowledge and skill and to get to that level of higher income. The research on knowledge today suggests that a person earns between 5% and 25% more per annum per year of schooling that they have after high school. If a person leaves school in the 12th grade, he or she will earn about $600,000 over the course of their life. If a person takes a 2-year college program, he or she will earn about $1 million over the course of their lifetime. If a person graduates from a 4-year college, he or she will earn about $1.4 million over the course of their working lifetime. With a graduate degree, a person will earn about $2 million over the course of their life. And with a PhD, a person can expect to earn an average of about $3 million. Investment in education really pays off. The second quality of high-performing men and women in America identified by the Gallup organization was self-reliance. This meant that these people looked to themselves for the solutions to their problems. They refused to make excuses or to blame others. They were highly self-responsible in everything they did. They didn't expect anyone else to come along and help them. They knew that if they wanted to improve their lives or their work, it was up to them to get busy doing it. They knew that they were where they were and what they were because of themselves. And if they wanted things to change, it was up to them to do it. The interesting thing about self-reliance is that when you make a habit of looking to yourself rather than expecting help from others, others will line up to help you. But if you attempt to get others to help you before you take the first step, people will avoid you at all costs. The third quality of high performers identified by the Gallup survey was expertise. These men and women became well known for being top performers in their fields. As a result, they earned the respect and esteem of not only their colleagues and subordinates, but of other people within their professions and industries who could and would help them up the ladder of success. Your job is to set a goal to become a member of the top 10% of your field. What I've found over time is that the hardest part of becoming one of the top performers in whatever you do is the very act of making a decision to do so in the first place. I've worked with hundreds, perhaps thousands, of the top people in every industry. In every case, the turning point in their lives was when they made a firm decision and committed themselves to paying whatever price it took for them to get into the top 10%. And once you get into the top 10%, you will find that your life is better than you can even imagine today. It doesn't matter if it takes a week, a month, a year, or several years. It's worth the price that you pay. You will enjoy much higher levels of self-esteem and personal pride. You will have a far higher standard of living. And perhaps most important of all, you will have the respect and esteem of all the top people around you. The fourth quality identified in the Gallup study was intelligence. Intelligence was defined in three ways. The first was simply a matter of IQ. A person was intelligent because they got good grades in school. But this was not the most important. A second definition of intelligence is what is today called emotional intelligence. This is the ability to interact effectively with other people. Especially, it's the ability to empathize with others, and in so doing, enroll them in helping you to achieve your goals. A brilliant person without empathy will have very limited success in his or her career. And the third, and perhaps the most important definition of intelligence, is that intelligence is a way of acting. If you act intelligently, you are smart. If you act stupidly, you are stupid, irrespective of your IQ. And what then, by definition, is an intelligent way of acting? That's easy. An intelligent way of acting is a way that moves you closer to one of your own self-determined goals. Every single thing that you do that moves you toward achieving something that you have decided is important to you is, by definition, an intelligent act. On the other hand, every time you do something that is inconsistent with your own goals, that moves you away from one of them, you are behaving stupidly. Most people don't understand that if their goal is to be healthy, trim, and fit, every time they refrain from exercising or overeat, they are behaving stupidly by their own definition of what they really want. If your goal is to be one of the top people in your field, and instead you spend endless hours reading the newspapers and drive around listening to the radio instead of studying your craft, you are behaving stupidly. In its simplest terms, if all you did throughout the day was organize your behavior so that everything you did was moving you towards something that you really wanted, your life would change and improve at a more rapid rate than you can imagine. The final ingredient of success possessed by the highest performing people in America was found to be result orientation. This is something we have talked about. I will come back to it again in a moment. I've studied successful people for almost 30 years. I've read perhaps 3,000 books, listened to thousands of hours of audio cassettes, and read thousands of magazines and articles. I have searched like a detective for the clues that indicate or suggest high levels of success. I have discussed almost all of them in this course on Thinking Big. My big breakthrough in understanding success came many years ago when I realized that it was largely a matter of how you felt about yourself. If you feel terrific about yourself, you'll be more willing to take the necessary risks that move you toward your goals. The higher your level of self-esteem and self-regard, the more courage and confidence you will have, and the more willing you will be to dream big dreams and to think big in your work and personal life. I was speaking to a businessman at a seminar recently. I was autographing books after my talk when he came up and told me that 10 years ago he had been driving a truck and unloading boxes for this very organization, the convention of which he was attending as a participant. He told me that at that time he had begun reading and listening to tapes, especially the parts about goal setting and personal development, and they changed his life. Today, he's among the top 10 professionals in his field, and he's earning close to 10 times what he was earning 10 years ago when he was loading boxes for this same company. Sometimes people ask me about the factor of luck. They're convinced that luck plays a major role in a person's success. They feel that some people have it and some people don't. They try to convince me that a person gets to the top of his or her field largely as a result of getting the lucky breaks, which they, of course, were deprived. I've studied luck for many years. My conclusion is that luck is based on probabilities. This means that the more different things you do that are likely to help you to be successful, the more likely it is you will do the right thing at the right time. It is not a matter of luck. It is a matter of clear design. If you were throwing darts at a dartboard, even in a darkened room, you would eventually hit the dartboard. And if you threw enough darts, you would eventually hit a bullseye. However, if the light were on, and you could see the dartboard clearly, and you had ample time to practice and an unlimited supply of darts, the time it would take you to shoot a bullseye would be dramatically reduced. And of course, when you did hit a bullseye, everyone would exclaim about how lucky you were. Your reason for listening to this program and your aim in life is to not just live, but to live greatly. Your aim must be to do something wonderful with your life. Your goal should be not only to think big, but to accomplish extraordinary things. You don't go out and have a great life. You go out and you make it a great life. You recognize yourself as the primary creative force in your own life, and then you go out and you make it into what you want it to be. The word GREAT has five letters, G-R-E-A-T. This acronym stands for the five keys to success in your life and in anything you decide to do. We've discussed these throughout this program, and I want to touch on them briefly so that you have a clear track to run on from this point forward. The first letter of the word GREAT, G, stands for goal orientation. All high-performing men and women are extremely goal-oriented. They have a clear vision of their ideal futures. They have written goals and written plans to accomplish them. They review their goals on a regular basis. They read books and they study goal setting so that they can become more and more skilled at it. They recognize that you cannot hit a target that you can't see. The keys to goal setting, which many people hear but only a few follow, are simple. To repeat, first, decide exactly what you want. Second, write it down clearly and in detail. Third, set a deadline, and if it's a large goal, set sub-deadlines for the goal. Fourth, make a plan. A plan is a list of every single thing that you could think of that you could possibly do to achieve the goal. Then, organize your list of activities in terms of time and priority. What should you do first, and what is most important? Sixth, take action toward your goal. Do something, anything that moves you one step ahead. As Confucius said, a journey of 1,000 leagues begins with a single step. And seventh, make a 100% total commitment to your goal. Make the decision that once you have started towards your goal, you will never, never give up. Those seven steps can be repeated over and over again. When you finish listening to this program, take out a pad of paper and begin writing out the goals that you want to achieve. Organize them by priority. Ask yourself, if I could only achieve one goal on this list, which one would contribute the most to my life? A key part of goal setting is for you to be clear about the outcome you desire, but be flexible about the process. Once you have programmed a goal into your subconscious and superconscious minds, remarkable things will happen to you, many of them completely unexpected. You must be ready to change your direction when a new opportunity or possibility opens up. Flexibility is the number one quality you will require to survive and thrive in the years ahead. You must be willing to change course, reconsider your direction, and try something completely different on the way to your goals. But as long as your goals are clear, they will materialize exactly when you're ready for them. The second letter in the word GREAT is the letter R. R stands for result orientation. In every study of high-performing men and women, the bottom line is that they have developed the ability to get the results for which they are responsible. They have developed the ability to do the job that others are counting on them to do. Success and failure in our society today is solely dependent on a person's ability to deliver or not deliver. For most of human history, people were manual laborers. They worked with their muscles and by the sweat of their brow. In the last few decades, we have made a dramatic shift from manpower to mind power. Today, 75% and more of all people in our society earn their livings with their minds, not with their muscles. Today, you are a knowledge worker. A knowledge worker is a person who must first decide what is to be done before they become involved in how it is to be done. You are the president of your own personal services corporation. You are the chief executive officer of a company with one employee, yourself. Your primary job is to sell the services of your corporation for the very best combination of rewards and opportunities. You must be continually thinking how you can apply your special knowledge and experience in the marketplace to achieve the highest return for yourself and your family. Your most valuable asset, the major source of cash flow for your company, is your earning ability. This is your ability to utilize your knowledge and skill to bring about results for which others will pay. This earning ability is gradually becoming obsolete every day, every week, every month. You must therefore be continually upgrading your earning ability if you want to continue to earn the kind of money that you have set as your own personal goal. Your most precious resource is your time, and the best investment of your time is to continually increase your earning ability. Every effort that you make to upgrade your knowledge and skills adds to your ability to earn more money and increases your flexibility. It makes you more capable of doing more different and valuable jobs for more different customers or employers under more different circumstances. Many people today are upset because they don't earn more money, or even worse, because they get laid off from jobs that they've had for some time. They think that it is up to the company or society, whatever that is, to create highly paid jobs and to keep them employed. But only you can create a highly paid job. You create a highly paid job by becoming highly productive. No one else can do this for you. All the company does is to hire your services and combine it with the services of others to produce a product that the market will pay for. Your job is to make sure that your contribution to these services is worth every penny and more that they pay. In its simplest terms, the primary reason for failure in a market-based economy is low levels of productivity, usually combined with time wastage. This is why it is so important for you to continually focus on high-value activities. Work on your key result areas. Define and determine your critical success factors, and then make a plan to become excellent in each one of them. Work all the time you work. Remember, work time is not play time. Let the other people around you socialize with their friends and go out for long lunches and coffee breaks. Your job, your goal, is to be the best you can be and to get real results for your organization. Developing a reputation for hard work will bring you to the attention of people who can help you more than perhaps any other single factor. The third letter in the word great, E, stands for excellence orientation. A wise man once told me that the key to success in any field is to get good, get better, be the best. When you resolve to be the very best at what you do, you will find that there is very little competition. When you decide to do more than you are paid for, or to go the extra mile, you will find that there is very little competition as well. As they say, there are never any traffic jams on the extra mile. And the wonderful thing about working all out, of putting your whole heart into what you do and greatly exceeding what your company expects of you, is that it puts you on the side of the angels. Not only do you feel terrific about yourself, but you earn the high regard of others. You become better and better in your field and increase your competence and your earning ability immeasurably. Many years ago, when I was working for a very successful businessman, I used to put in 10, 12, and even 14-hour days. Sometimes I was away from home for several days and even weekends. When the other people in the company asked me why I worked so hard when I wasn't getting paid any more than they were, I couldn't answer them. Later, I realized that I was actually taking advantage of my boss. I was using the doors of opportunity he opened for me to develop my skills at a far more rapid rate than the other people in the company. Before the dust had settled, I was making more money than any of them. I had more responsibilities. I had a larger staff and a higher salary than any of the people I started with. By taking advantage of my employer, as you can do, I accelerated my growth and my career by several years. You should do the same thing. Remember that excellence is a journey, not a destination. It's a moving target. And we know that your weakest vital skill usually sets the height at which you can use all your other skills. So go to someone you trust and ask them if they see any weaknesses in your performance. If you're in sales, ask your manager or even one of your customers. Take people out with you and have them sit and observe your work. Have people comment on what they see or fail to see. Remember, it's almost impossible for you to get better by yourself or to identify your areas of weakness without input from others. As Ken Blanchard says, feedback is the breakfast of champions. Read everything you possibly can about your field. If anything, dedicate yourself to overlearning. You should know deep down inside that you will seldom meet anyone who knows as much about your business as you do. Ben Feltman, when, according to the Guinness Book of Records, he was the top salesman in the world, was still studying 2 hours every night to keep on top of and ahead of the changes in his field. You should do the same. At a seminar recently, a young man came up to me and told me that he had bought 2 of my audio learning programs 1 year before at an earlier seminar. He reminded me that I had guaranteed the audience that these tapes would pay for themselves with increased income. He said that he had carefully tracked the results from what he learned on the audio programs and found that he had increased his income by $22,000 in the previous 12 months just by listening to them over and over. Another young man came up to me at a seminar in Pittsburgh and told me that he had purchased 1 program on selling and raised his income over a period of 4 years from $22,000 per year to $176,000 in 1 year, and he was only 26 years old. My favorite success story is that of an 8th grade dropout who purchased 1 single audio program on personal effectiveness and increased his income from $30,000 to $304,000 in 1 year as a result. Today, there's no price that you can put on a good idea or on the right knowledge if it is what you need at that particular moment to move ahead in your life. The future belongs to the competent, and to earn more, you must learn more. Continually invest in yourself. Sometimes you hear people complain that education is expensive. Well, if they think education is expensive, they should try ignorance. There's nothing worse than working 10 or 20 extra years to achieve the same level of income that you could have achieved years earlier if you had taken the time to learn your craft and become really excellent at it at an earlier age. In every manufacturing process today, there are byproducts that are usually thrown away. However, in an age of conservation, some companies are finding new ways to take the byproducts and turn them into new products. Sometimes these byproducts become more profitable than the main product itself. In your work life, the byproducts of your day-to-day activities are your spare time. And it is often your judicious use of your spare time, the byproducts of your day, that will largely determine your success or failure later in life. So use your time wisely to continually upgrade your skills and your earning ability to become really excellent at what you do. The 4th letter in the word great, A, stands for action orientation. In study after study, we find that all high performers are intensely action-oriented. It's probably the number one quality of success. The more different things you do and the faster you do them, the more you learn and the better you get. The big killer of human potential is procrastination, which is putting off big, important tasks until later, and finally, never getting to them at all. Procrastination is a habit based on inertia or on fear. You can and you must get over it. Becoming intensely action-oriented requires your making a habit of deciding what you want to do and then moving quickly before you have time to think about it or to be afraid. One of my favorite rules for success is this: act boldly, and unseen forces will come to your aid. When you act boldly, when you seize the initiative and continue taking action, you develop a sense of forward momentum that keeps you going long after the average person has quit. Today, time is the most valuable single factor of production. Saving time is the essence of everything that you do to improve your effectiveness and productivity in your work. And saving time requires that you move quickly when opportunity presents itself. You develop a sense of urgency. You do it now. You set clear goals. You determine the specific results you need to get to achieve the goals. You dedicate yourself to becoming very good at what you do, and then you take continuous action in the direction of your dreams. The final letter in the word great is the letter T, which stands for time orientation. Top people give a lot of thought to how they use their time. They plan it and allocate it carefully. They make sure that they are using it on their highest value activities. They take a lot of time to stand back and look at where they're going to get the necessary minutes and hours to perform the most important tasks that are facing them. Time management allows you to control the sequence of events in your work. It allows you to determine what to do first, what to do second, and what to do not at all. It gives you a tremendous sense of control, and remember, you are always free to choose the sequence of events. You're always free to choose what you do and what you don't do. And in those choices will be determined everything that happens to you. Remember, you cannot save time. You can only spend it differently. You can only reallocate time away from low-value activities toward high-value activities. You can reallocate it away from idle socializing toward the work and the activities that really make a positive difference in your life. The most important part of time management is your ability to set priorities, to apply the 80-20 rule to everything you do, and to work continuously on only those items in the top 20% that represent 80% of the value. Time management is really life management. When we talk about saving time, we're really talking about saving life. The reason that you read, listen to audio programs, take courses, and continually upgrade your skills is because knowledge and information represents condensed time. It can save you weeks and months of hard work when you become better and better at what you do. Investing in yourself is one of the highest payoff uses of your time that you can engage in. There's an old proverb that says that if you eat a live frog first thing when you get up in the morning, you can go through the day with the confidence of knowing that that is the worst thing that could possibly happen to you. By the same token, if you get up each morning and you immediately begin work on the biggest, most difficult, and most important task facing you, and you discipline yourself to work at it single-mindedly until it's complete, you will have the satisfaction of knowing that you are on top of your work and on top of your life. As we come to the end of this program, I want to say once again that your ability to think big about yourself and your life is what makes your future virtually unlimited. We are living in the greatest time in all of human history. There are more opportunities and possibilities available to you today than ever before. If you commit yourself to dreaming big dreams, to getting continually better at what you do, to working on your high-priority tasks continually, and to never, never giving up, there is virtually nothing in the world that you cannot accomplish. Thank you for listening to this program. I wish you the very best of health, happiness, and success in the months and years ahead. Please take the practical ideas contained in this program and apply them to your life. Make a list of activities today. Organize the list by priority. Select the most important thing that you can possibly do, and then, every day, get up and eat that frog. Good luck.
If you enjoyed this program from Master Motivator and Success Coach Brian Tracy, you are probably the type of high achiever that would benefit from Brian Tracy's personal success coaching program. This one-on-one coaching program is unlike any self-development tool ever offered. Imagine spending 12 weeks with your own coach who has been personally trained by Brian Tracy. Your coach will aid you on building your life strategies, guiding you as you take action steps toward making your greatest desires a reality. If you are like many, you often set goals, but sometimes lack the motivation to carry them through. With the ongoing nurturing and guidance of your personal coach and this outstanding program, you will be accountable for the changes you want to make in your life, and you'll soon see those changes becoming a reality. Created exclusively for Nightingale Conant by Brian Tracy, this program has had massive life-changing results on those that have committed themselves to it. It consists of a minimum of 12 weeks of 30-minute one-on-one telecoaching sessions with a trained personal coach. Accompanying the program are 12 cassette tapes, one for each week of study, along with a guidebook. This extraordinary program focuses on every aspect of your life and helps to integrate and balance your life success skills along with your business growth. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program offers you guidance in the areas of strategic planning, intelligence, health and fitness, power, career success, time management, financial planning, life success, relationships, goal setting, leadership, and building character. Your life will magically transform as you turn your conceptualized thoughts into active steps toward achieving your goals. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program is one of the most comprehensive, powerful self-development programs to date and is designed to fit your goals, dreams, and desires, both personally and professionally. Act now, today, and call in to receive further information and your free personal success profile with one of our trained personal development representatives. Designed with Brian Tracy, this profile will identify your strengths and pinpoint your growth opportunities. We offer this analysis to you at no cost and no obligation, so don't delay. To register for this outstanding coaching program or to receive your free personal success profile, call Nightingale Conet now at this number, 1-877-297-9799. That's 1-877-297-9799 and ask for Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Profile. It's one phone call that could change your life.